Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Oh, man. Friday, it's here. Tell you what, you earned it this week, didn't you? Oh, yeah, you put in your time. Yesterday is Thursday. Today, it's a completely different day. It's Friday. You have hope. The weekend's in front of you. Welcome to your weekend. Here's the phone number. We'd like you to have fun with us tonight by calling 436-7900 or also 800-925-1120. Good old 800 number is still alive and kicking. So we tried to keep the subjects a little looser on that Thursday night into Friday morning. So if there's anything you want to bring up, you have an open invite to bring it up, whatever it is. If you want to call and praise the radio program like so many of you do, we'll put you right on top. If you want to call in and complain about something I do, you can do that too. I don't care. 436-7900. Let me go to Angie in St. Louis. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm good. I'm calling about the name for the soccer team.
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, somebody mentioned Jack Buck's name, and I thought, well, how about the Buckaroos?
The Buckaroos. Buckaroos sounds like that name. It's like a kid. You pat him on the top of the head, and you call him, aw, there's my little Buckaroo.
Right.
It's like a demeaning. The Buckaroos. Not too bad.
Well, it's better than some of these other ones I've heard.
Which ones don't you like?
Oh, I don't remember.
What do you think of the gooey butter cakes? That's my favorite.
No.
That's the best one.
No.
No gooey butter cakes. What about the St. Louis Trumps?
No, absolutely not.
No, you don't like the Trump. Okay, how about the St. Louis Rams?
No way, Jose.
I don't like that either. I am traumatized by all of that, so I'm going to stay away from it. Okay, thanks, Angie. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right, so the Buckaroos. Here's one that came in, the Maulers, Mound City Maulers. Sounds pretty good. That's a text message at 436-7900. Lou calling in. Hi.
Hi. How about the St. Louis Scores?
You have to say it like they do. We have to really draw out scores to make it work. I like that. You started to do that a little bit, so do you add a couple extra O's in there to make it a little more drawn out?
You want me to try it again?
Yes, please.
The St. Louis Scores! It's almost as good as Overnight America the way you do it.
I know, it's a stretch it out. Maybe I could be their PA announcer, and I can do that for them. It's really stretching out. All right, Lou, St. Louis Scores. I like it. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
All right, have a great weekend, Lou. Sorry. The St. Louis score! The St. Louis, how do they do it? It goes, score! But they stretch it out for maybe about 8 minutes longer than that. Yeah, I don't know how they do it so well. However they do it pretty good. You know, this hour, a couple of things I want to get to. I was going to talk about the miniature horses as service animals. I don't quite get it myself. In fact, I would never want to be next to a person with a service horse. Even if it's a miniature horse, a service miniature horse on a flight. Could you imagine? To me, that just seems miserable. It seems like they're making way too many accommodations at this point. If anything, I think you should be forced to buy two seats because there's no way a mini horse is going to sit in that little small area that's right in front of you like a dog or a cat would a service animal like that. So maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. Also, Jennifer Cushill, she has a book out. She's got a website and she helps college kids try to improve their chances of finding that job outside of college when they finally walk down the aisle and graduate. They'll have all that debt on their back, but at least they'll have a job if they get a little bit of help the millennial skills gap. We'll talk to her about that coming up too. I want to say hi to my buddy John, who's listening right now, streaming online. He's going to come visit this weekend, and I feel like we're going to have to go eat some of those Burger King tacos together. The St. Louis Arches for the soccer team is a text message that just came in. I think the Arches is too standard. I would much rather prefer the Archies. The St. Louis Archies. It sounds more fun. The Arches, Archies. It sounds maybe almost the same thing. Wayne from St. Peter's. Hi.
Yeah, you just said something a few minutes ago that I hear a lot, particularly on radio and TV. You know, the weekend's here. There's no rain. It's good for the weekend and that. Nowadays, there's probably more people off in the middle of the week than there are on weekends.
You think so?
Oh, there's got to be a lot of people off on during the week.
Why? Is that just a general observation, or is there a reason?
No. Well, you got all your transportation people, you got all your fast food people, you got all, you know, all those type of people,
and they're off during the week.
During the week, yeah.
Yeah. So those service jobs, they're still working on the weekend. So when I am celebrating going to the weekend, you're saying they're not celebrating with me.
Probably not. They probably care less. It rains all weekend.
You know? Unless it does. All right. Thanks, Wayne.
Why have to work so hard because people won't go out in it, you know?
All right. Hey, thanks, Wayne. Good to hear from you.
Take care, bud. All right.
So, Wayne, I get it. That's the thing. My work schedule is very unique. Sunday night through Thursday night, which is really Monday morning through Friday morning, go until 2 a.m., this is always my exciting time. When we start playing Rebecca Black on Friday, we get into it. That's how I know I'm this close. I'm not like a couple of days away from the weekend. I'm like this close to the weekend. I get real close to them. I even get closer to the microphone on the last day of the week. That's how you can tell I'm really leaning into it. One last call we'll do on this. Arnold calling in from Melville. What's going on?
Yeah, listen, I created Try Us, You'll Like Us for the Slyman Brothers. Years ago, I was the originator of that.
Originator of what?
I originated the slogan, Try Us, You'll Like Us.
Oh, Try Us.
The Slyman Brothers, the slogan.
Oh, okay.
And I also did other things for songs, creative songs and that, you know? But I got a good one for you here.
Yes.
The St. Louis Triumphs.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like that. The Triumphs, like the motorcycle?
Yeah, you know, the triumphs. When you win, you triumph with the enemy. You know, you win.
I like it.
Triumphs.
Is there a St. Louis connection, or is it just something that sounds good?
No, it just sounds good, the St. Louis Triumphs.
I like it. All right, Arnold, very nice. Thank you. All right, we're going to add that to the list, the St. Louis Triumphs. We have a lot of great suggestions here. I wonder what it's going to be. You know, with Bill McDermott saying St. Louis legacy, that's going to get a lot of consideration. I'm just hoping if anyone on the selection committee is listening, please just humor me. Put the St. Louis gooey butter cakes on the list. I'm telling you, people are going to love it. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now is the CEO and founder of EYP Ventures, exploring your potential, career planning online, a platform there that they put together. Jennifer Kuschel, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Great to be on with you, Ryan.
I was actually kind of surprised. One of the statistics, 3 million students who just graduated college, 67% did not have a job lined up before graduation. I was one of those. I graduated college in 2005. The markets were a little bit different there. And radio's a weird industry to begin with. It's kind of a tough industry. But there are a lot of people that have certain jobs lined up. And I was always jealous of those that actually had something ready to go before they graduated. But 67% today, the way the markets are, the way the job demand is, that surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of statistics that are surprising when it comes to youth employment. And while a lot of people are still looking for jobs, you know, I mean, even those that have found jobs upon graduation, a lot of them are not happy with them. A lot of them are taking jobs just to say that they're employed, just to make other people happy. We're finding very small numbers actually landing in the things that they're studying, in the fields that they're studying. And so it's a challenge here, you know. Many people, most people don't go work in the area in which they have their studies in, their major. Mm-hmm. You have a ton of entrepreneurs who are stuck in the corporate world because no one ever told them they could be entrepreneurs. You have a lot of people just going out for paychecks, because they're under so much pressure to find work, to make a living, and also fulfill expectations parents, friends, and school.
When I graduated, it took me 6 months to find a job in my field that I studied. So what's the average time, do you think, it takes? If 67% don't have a job lined up, how long does it normally take for them to find
one? Well, it depends, because frankly, a lot of people are studying things that are not related to what they want to do, because it seemed like the greatest option at the time. But I think a lot of young people are challenged to map the field of study with actual opportunities. Look at how many people go into liberal arts. You can't do liberal arts in the real world, necessarily.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of consistency between what people study and what they do, unless you're looking at a lot of the hardcore skills like accounting or, you know, marketing or finance.
You call those hardcore skills?
those are more clearly defined and mapped, I'd say.
Okay. I like the term. Hardcore skills sounds like you're a street brawler, UFC, that you studied to be a fighter. So what if you're a college student and you're worried that by the time you graduate, all you'll have is debt and no job? So what are some ways that you think parents can prepare their college-age students, or maybe the college-age students themselves, of course, to better their chances to get a job in their field after graduation?
I think there are a couple things you can do that are really practical that make a lot of difference in the end. You know, one is to try to get as clear as possible about the types of things you are interested in. Mm-hmm. Start to tell your story, your experience, your interests, your ambitions in a way that speaks to those things. Another thing that a lot of young people are challenged with is mapping their skills and interests with actual functions in the working world. Mm-hmm. That a lot has to do with the fact that it's hard to understand how business works sometimes, and everything is a business. Everything is structured in some way as an organization, and understanding what that means in terms of the right language to use when you're looking for something is really important. I also say that young people should try to map to industries as much as they can. There's an industry for everything, like radio, like publishing, like sports. Find the industry that you're interested in and start to tap into those resources, because there are big industry associations or publications, events, all sorts of things. And that's a whole ecosystem in itself. And the more time you can spend in that world with different people, consuming the same media, following experts, the more you're going to become much more fluent in their language, their processes, and even, you know, what opportunities exist.
Jennifer Kuschel is the CEO and founder of Exploring Your Potential, EYP Ventures. And I've noticed, too, and you mentioned the entrepreneurial side, that not a lot of the college students necessarily gravitate towards that. They think, now I have my degree, now I can be hired, this is the plan all along, I can finally get on that career path with a pension and a white picket fence. But that's interesting you mentioned going to business for yourself, because I would think at that age, you have some debt for student loans, you probably don't have a portfolio that would appeal or be at least competitive against some of these other people that are freelancing. So how is that really a viable thing out of college to start your own business?
I think it's a very viable thing, and I frankly think most young people should be studying entrepreneurship. One, because it teaches you to recognize opportunity, it teaches you how to build opportunity, and basically any skill or expertise that you have, you can present to the marketplace from a more entrepreneurial perspective. Mm. It doesn't mean you have to start a company with lots of people and raise money or go the high-tech route. There are micropreneurs, there are intrapreneurs working inside of big corporations. There are infinite ways to be a consultant or a freelancer. Most of the net new job growth in the country is coming from the gig economy, mm-hmm. which is like the alternative economy, the Ubers, those kinds of services. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you can bring. So I think entrepreneurship has a much broader connotation than we often give it credit for. And I think more and more young people are really interested in entrepreneurial opportunities.
Yeah. What is the average amount of student debt that someone coming out of college would normally have?
Oh, God, that's a good question.
I
don't know that number off the top of my head, but it's pretty significant. I know a lot of people that are graduating with $50,000 to $100,000 to several hundred thousand dollars in debt.
It hurts me just to hear that number. It takes me back.
Oh, it's painful.
I know.
Well, that's where the ROI conversation comes in, mm-hmm. you know, about what is the value of a college degree these days or a professional degree? You have a lot of people going into school thinking that they're going to be more employable, which, you know, you are statistically supposed to make another $1 million over your lifetime if you get a college degree, but it doesn't mean that they're going to find you jobs. And a lot of kids who have graduated undergrad are now moving into graduate school, not because they want that advanced, you know, training, but because they really don't even know what to do. So they're almost deferring going into the real world by getting more education.
Oh, interesting.
Which in some cases is great, and in other cases it actually can even overqualify them for some of the jobs they do want.
Well, let's say you were advising someone that's a college student and they're just doing it because they feel like they have to. And let's say they're on a path, but they don't exactly know if that's the path they want to be on, but they're afraid to start over again. And what would you talk?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of college students that don't know what they're doing. They may feel like they're trapped and, oh, what am I going to do now? And then they stick on to something that ultimately isn't what they want to do. So what would you do to encourage those college students?
Well, I would say there are a couple things. You know, one, getting an education is never a bad idea. Being grounded in academics, it makes you a critical thinker. It makes you understand how to function in the economy, see the world differently. Also, you know, being more intellectually curious is really important these days, always, really.
Yeah.
But I think there are a couple different considerations. If you're completely lost, which many, many students are, you know, one, be really thoughtful about what schools you're choosing, what classes, what majors, the students you're hanging out with, the extracurricular activities you become a part of. Try to surround yourself with successful people that you admire, you know, and also take that time to explore. That's what college is all about. You're supposed to learn about yourself. You're supposed to explore new things. And there's no reason you have to stick to your specific, you know, school or pathway of study. You can be all over campus. You can be visiting other campuses. You know, and also there are a lot of counseling resources that are available to students. And on average, only about 10% of students visit the career counselors. Not to say that they all have all the answers, but, you know, there are very supportive resources on most college campuses that most students never even take advantage of.
Career counselor. Yeah, I can tell you I didn't even know. And when I was going through college, all these different resources that were available, you had to see the career counselor once, and it was in your senior year, to make sure you had enough credits to graduate. They had to just go through and make sure you didn't forget something. That was the only time I ever saw a career counselor. And I had no idea that was even afforded to you, like you could actually go and talk to someone.
That sounds like more of an academic advisor, to be honest. But, but you know, that frequency that you mentioned is not uncommon. I mean, I know business school deans that have 8,000 business school students and, like, you know, 8 career counselors.
Oh.
Or schools with thousands of students and have 1.
Wow.
So your chance of getting substantive time with counselors is not very high. So it's really important that you learn to cultivate mentors and advisors of your own and get involved in organizations where you can get that support. But, you know, if I may, you know, part of the reason that we're in the business that we're in and doing what we do with exploring your potential is that, you know, schools can't solve these challenges to scale.
Yeah.
And so by building an online learning program all around the world of work, you know, we've been able to help a lot of universities bring content in that's really substantive and helps young people build a career path for themselves.
Yeah, and I think people are more comfortable that way. Naturally, at that age, they like to just look what they can do online first. And those type of things are very popular because they know the resources are out there if you can lay it out to them. And that's what you're doing with Exploring Your Potential?
Well, basically what we've done is create a framework to expose young people to the world of work. And for me, that doesn't just mean get a job. It means look at jobs, look at opportunities of all shapes and sizes, entrepreneurial, franchise, licensing, franchising. Look locally, look globally. Look at emerging markets, look at first world markets. And also, we don't say that you have to have a job. We talk about social impact. We talk about working in alternative economies and alternative structures. And really what it does is it helps young people get really clear on who they are, what's of most interest to them, and help them map to the world what they can do. And we give them a framework so they can learn from industry experts. They can explore the world. They can build confidence. They can understand how to best position themselves to maximize their success.
Yeah, you know, and if someone wanted to check out that program you put together, the Exploring Your Potential, where can they find it?
Oh, it's online. It's at exploringyourpotential.com.
Perfect.
And we have smiles and all sorts of outcomes. And, you know, we have like 80% increases on confidence and clarity and focus. Wow. And I just love that when you're talking about so many young people are just completely lost.
Oh, yeah. Let me mention one other thing, because I don't know if this was necessarily ethical when I was going through college, but it worked like a charm. And maybe you can tell me if this was a do or don't when it comes to getting some time.
No fake ID?
No fake IDs. Now, trying to get time with the dean was very difficult. But every once in a while, you knew you'd want to go talk about something in your program. They're not great at scheduling. They're only in certain times or whatever it is. This is what I did. Looking back at it doesn't necessarily, it's innocent enough. What I would do is I became friends with the people that were in that office by bringing them a box of like bakery pastries and cookies every once in a while. And I would do that maybe once a semester. And I'll tell you what, whenever I wanted to see the dean, I got right on that schedule book.
I think you are so smart. There's nothing unethical about a little bribery through sugar. I gotta say, I think a lot of relationships flourish because I used to get great sweets in New York because I brought chocolate to one of the guys at the hotel. I'm a big fan of what you did, and it's really important that. But listen, you said you touched on something really important, relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to cultivate and build relationships. And it doesn't mean you have to bribe people, but just being there, being friendly, you know, doing little gestures and things like that make them know that you're thinking of them and being thoughtful. The people want to go out of their way to help you.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most valuable skills you can learn in life, to build relationships with people.
Absolutely. All right, so the website, you can go to exploringyourpotential.com. Jennifer Kuschel, CEO and founder of EYP Ventures, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you, Ryan.
That was a fun interview. Informative, too. Learned a bunch of new things. All right, so coming up next, this, you may have seen this. Miniature horses will be allowed to fly as service animals, according to the Department of Transportation. Miniature horses as service animals. Come on now. It's Overnight America, KMOX. This was making its rounds earlier today. I'm sure you saw it, but there's been this debate, what should be included as a service animal, what shouldn't be a service animal. The problem that we have with service animals anymore is that it's almost loosely associated to any animal if they want it to be. Like, you can go to Amazon. You can go to these websites online. I should have looked it up ahead of time, but you can just order these online. I don't know if Amazon per se sells them, but I'm going to guess they do. And you could buy what would make any animal look like a service animal. They don't have to be certified. They don't have to be trained. They don't actually have to be recognized as a service animal. But then you can make it look like a service animal by buying the harness or the different signage that you would put on it, and then use that as a way to try to circumvent different regulations inside businesses, or in this case, airplanes. And today, the miniature horse lobbyist found their way to a party and really lived it up as the National Transportation, or no, the Association of Flight Attendants and all these different, like, yeah, the U.S. Department of Transportation announcing that miniature horses are officially allowed to fly as service animals in all cabins of commercial planes. I don't like this idea myself. I don't fly enough. I don't fly a lot, but it would just be my luck. The time I finally get on a plane, or my wife and I finally go on a vacation, because we haven't been on one for a long time, or we take our son, we finally go to Disney or something like that, hop on the plane, and we're next to one of these stinky, stinky miniature horses that I'm just waiting for it to use the bathroom on the floor, depending on how long the flight is. I'm waiting for all this. I don't like the idea of it. I don't think it's necessary to include we're talking about a service, emotional, miniature horse onto a flight and say it's a guaranteed right that you have to allow onto these planes. It shouldn't be that way. I mean, sure, the airlines could decide what they want or what they don't want, but this is what happens when the U.S. Department of Transportation puts out this guideline. They say you have to, or you could be under penalty of law. We set the regulations. You may have to allow this sort of thing. I think it's pretty ridiculous myself. I think if you are going to allow something like this, there's no way this horse is going to be able to comfortably fit in front of you. I'm sure you're going to have to, take over most of or all of the legroom area in front of the seat next to you in order to do this. Either that or this horse is going to be in the aisleway, which I'm sure is not allowed. So here's where the story goes in Fox News. Maybe you see this differently. Maybe you think that, oh, thank goodness, I finally can take my service horse onto a plane. 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. Says the announcement doesn't bind airlines to fly all service miniature horses by law, but it does allude to penalties if they violate the rule, which is to allow miniature horses on planes. Isn't that a catch-22? They're saying, all right, I know you got lawyers. You may have to use them if someone complains because we are the Department of Transportation. It says, after reviewing the comments on the issue, we believe that it would be in the public's interest and within our discretionary authority to prioritize ensuring that the most commonly recognized service animals, a.k.a. dogs, cats, and miniature horses, are accepted for transport. Come on now. Don't we need just a little bit of common sense here? Come on. Can't you understand that there's going to be some pretty big inconvenience factors for the people around you bringing a service horse onto a plane? Now, if you need a service animal, why did you pick a horse, number one? I'd be curious for that. But number two, let's say you do have a service horse. Now, if you expect that the accommodations for another passenger who paid for a ticket, your horse is more important than that other passenger, I think you're flat wrong. I think that if you're going to do this, you got to buy a ticket next to you too, just to make it so this thing's going to be able to comfortably transport itself. Because I don't know about you, when's the last time you're on a plane? They don't give you a lot of space to maneuver around on these things. It's not luxurious. And you're probably going to be flying coach, and you're probably going to have this horse, if you were to just look at the length of it, probably two seats worth. It's not going to be able to comfortably get underneath your seat by any means. And then the big problem with all of this, and I think the glaring gap, is that anyone with a miniature horse is going to be able to raise their hand and say, this is a service animal, when actually it may not be. And I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm going to guess there's going to be a lot more fraud than there's going to be actual service horses onto these flights. A lot more fraud. And it happens a lot. I mean, it's not just with horses, dogs, cats, all of these things. They just automatically say, well, because I want this thing and I want to transport it with me and not pay the cost of transporting it as like cargo, for example, I'm going to just say it's a service animal. I'll go online. I'll pay the money to make it look like it's one, even if it's really not. Let's see. According to American Miniature Horse Association, the AMHA, the animals often stand about, 2 to 3 feet tall. So 3 feet tall, weigh about 150 to 250 pounds. Buy a ticket for this thing. It's as big as a person. Department of Transportation's new 150 pounds. Okay, 250 pounds upwards. The Department of Transportation new ruling rejects Delta Airlines' ban on certain types of dog breeds. So they have to allow that sort of thing too. These airlines, they should be able to do what they need in this. The same thing with the dogs. It doesn't mean your dog is actually a service animal if you go and buy the sign and slap it on there and say, yep, it's a service animal now. That's not the case. There needs to be some sort of standard and certification in ways that the airlines could be able to look this up to see if it's legit. I don't think they have to take your word for it. I don't think they should have to take your word for it. You know, people sneak all kinds of things on there. You know, my support python, my support peacock, my support this, my support that. It is necessary. Some people absolutely need it, okay? Some people absolutely need it. But I don't think a 250-pound horse should trump being able to make this other person that's sitting next to you have zero space anymore. And let alone, maybe your flight's 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours long. Now all of a sudden you're going to have a horse where your knee's going to be into this horse's, I'm going to guess, back end, where you're just wondering if you're going to get excrement on you or something like that. Just knowing it's going to happen at any time. No thanks. There's enough problems and stress when it comes to flying to begin with. Maybe you think I'm way off on this. Go ahead, tell me why. 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. I think the airlines can make accommodations for people that need these service animals, but I think they need to be able to have some ability to check to see if it's actually a service animal. And they also need the ability to check if, for example, they have this in the case of sometimes you're a bigger person and you got to buy two seats because you can't fit in the seat, right? I understand that. Sometimes you just got to understand that if you're going to travel on this sort of transportation, that what you're allotted is that space. And if you have to spill over to another space and there's no possible way you can do it in the allotted space, you're just going to have to buy another ticket. It should be as simple as that. Let's see. The floodgates open, they say, January 2018 with an emotional support peacock named Dexter. How about that? Look at this thing. They show a picture of this peacock. The thing looks like a dinosaur. It's huge. I've seen peacocks before, and they're pretty small animals. This one is, it looks like a velociraptor. The thing is giant. I mean, unbelievable. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Look at here. Listener Dave from last hour. We need to figure out a catchy nickname I can use for this program. You know, Jim White had the big bumper. That was a great name. Great name! Dave's on to something here.
But I just wanted to let you know that I love your radio show, and you're starting to evoke memories of a guy that had a really nice nickname, and I think it's about time that we start talking about what we're going to make your nickname. We know that the big bumper is gone, so I just want to throw that out there.
So I need a nickname like Jim White had a nickname. That's what I should worry about?
You absolutely do. You've earned it. You've earned it.
All right, so that is Dave from Odessa. I need to come up with a cool nickname. Where did the big bumper name originate? I wonder who was the first person to say that or if Jim White came up with it himself. Somewhere, there's going to be something somewhere. I love the idea of coming up with a name. That is an old school radio thing. You don't see a lot of people nicknaming themselves anymore. It's been a long time since I've heard of a recent DJ that will use that outside of like the music format where they try to come up with something edgy or, you know, funny. Like, oh, I don't need to come up with any examples right now. I'll have to think of something, but maybe if you have some examples or some ideas of what I can use for a nickname on the show, you can text it in at 436-7900. Only one more hour left of Overnight America, and don't forget you can download the podcast anytime by going to kmox.com/ONA. Kevin Killeen did another great whole nother story. I really missed out on Kevin Killeen today. Normally, when I get into the radio station, Kevin's still here. He's wrapping up, finishing things up, and I get to talk to him for a couple of minutes on his way out. Today, that didn't happen. I didn't get a chance to. I came into the station a little later than usual. I had to take care of something at the house, and by the time I got in, Kevin was just driving out. We saw each other, but I know Kevin went to go drop off his daughter to school. The same daughter you heard that was doing some of these Muni updates with him. It was such a cool little whole nother story thing they did over the summer. But when I have him back, I'm going to have him sit down and talk about what that's like. Because I think technically he's an empty nester now, isn't he? That's a pretty big deal. I know his other children, I think, are older and out of the house. I think that was the last one he had in the house. Maybe I'm mistaken. I'll have to ask him about that. But anyway, I always, when I sit down and get into the radio station, the first thing I look for is, did Kevin record a whole nother story? And you know what? I was treated to this one.
Michael Young was struck by a Metrolink in daylight, December 1st, 2016. He says he was crossing the tracks on foot a little before noon at the Central West End station on South Euclid. His back was to the train and he was distracted. He had on headphones and a hoodie.
And it was just a big shock. I'm blessed to still be alive because it shocked me, and I could have just really went out mentally.
Were you alert and aware when it was dragging you?
No, sir. I don't even remember feeling the pain, and I was under no influence of any narcotics or anything like that. I didn't see it coming. Well,
did you have a hoodie on?
Yes, sir. I had a hoodie.
Did you have headphones on?
Yes, sir.
So you were in another world, and you couldn't hear or see the train coming?
Yes, sir. Correct.
And once you were hit, lights out, or did you remember
lights
anything?
Out. Don't remember anything after that. I remember this. It was a lady said, I believe they threw a white sheet over me. It was a lady said, hey, he got a pulse, a nurse, because I was by Bourne's Hospital. And they thought I was dead. A lady said, hey, no, he got a pulse. Call the ambulance. Don't call the morgue. Call the ambulance. He got a pulse. And I can remember this lady. I wish I can see her today. She was working on me, and after that, lights out again.
The accident sent Young to the hospital with a fractured skull and 8 broken ribs. Originally, he says a lawyer from one of the big law firms showed up at his bedside to sign him for a contract to sue Metrolink, but the case fell apart. They dropped him, and they suggested he go with a smaller law firm. The 37-year-old Young is now shopping for a lawyer to take on his case because he wants to sue Metro and get some kind of settlement.
Why should you get paid some money? Somebody might say, well, you know, you cross the tracks, you take a chance.
Yeah, because I just feel like I was on their property and their security should have been more alert.
With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Ooh. Could there be a lawsuit there? Oh, boy. That's a good question. I should ask Brad Young about that. Is there any potential for a lawsuit? I guess it depends. Were there things deterring the person, or were there warning lights? Were there not warning lights? Wow, what a story. They put a sheet over him thinking he's dead till the lady says, he ain't dead. Call the ambulance. Wow. Ah, Kevin, man. Sometimes you just find people to talk to. That's something Kevin is just so talented at. He can just walk around. He can spot someone and say, I bet you this person has a story. Another quick story here before we get to CBS News. So the Gardner perjury probe is, quote, alive and well. According to the report at KMOX.com, you can see this there. Special Prosecutor Jerry Carmody updated the judge this morning saying the perjury probe alive when it comes to Kim Gardner and her staff, perhaps lying under oath. We know that there is at least one so far, William Tisby, the lone person charged so far. Now, there could be more, and it could be as far as Kim Gardner. It's widely speculated, though, that other members of her team or herself could be a target if they continue to look into this. Doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me they're not giving this one up yet, mostly because it just stinks all the way around. All the way around. And as much as Eric Greitens was targeted by Kim Gardner, and it was a target job, that's exactly what it was. They were fishing and hoping, and you know what? They got the job done on their side, according to what they think. Well, this is what happens if Kim Gardner is indicted or perhaps loses her law license, her ability to practice. We know what happens. She's out. And Governor Parson gets to appoint a new prosecutor in St. Louis. So is it worth looking into this? Did she do something inappropriate? Did she lie? Did she perjure herself? If these things come up and there's any question and they suspend or she loses her license for a period of time, she's out and the governor gets to appoint a new prosecutor in St. Louis. And that would be one of the greatest first steps we could actually ask for. We can. I'm just hoping we get to that point. There's another story. This was on Fox 2 some time ago, maybe about a week ago. Probe involving St. Louis prosecutor's office costing taxpayers upwards of $400,000 so far by special prosecutors in this perjury investigation. St. Louis Post-Dispatch obtains record showing that the judge has approved a legal bill from the special prosecutor's law firm to continue to investigate William Tisby. So the case is not going away. They're continuing to fund this. They're going to continue to look into it. It just smells all the way around. I mean, we already had corruption in the county, and Steve Stenger is out. Where there is corruption, we're going to find it. It's for the best that we get rid and flush out people that are inappropriately using either taxpayer funds or their power in position as a politician, or in this case, what if they lied or did anything inappropriate on a very high-profile case in order to get what their own agenda through? And you know what? It's very likely that could have happened, at least in my opinion. So, keep going. I think they'll find something. Next hour, 1 hour left. Can you believe it? It's almost the weekend here on Overnight America. And I want to bring up our friend Kristen Arnold next hour, too. She saw something I said online, and she said, you're crazy.
So I said, okay, go ahead. Tell me. Tell me why I'm crazy. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.